Boss Man Show here with Robert McCullum, Florida A&M Rattlers head basketball coach, fresh off a trip to Puerto Rico. They're back at it, getting ready for the season coming up here. Coach McCullum, how things down there in Tallahassee, man?
Things are going well. We're in our second week of the 21-22 school year, and there's a lot of excitement on campus for so many reasons. And big reason is because now things are, while we clearly are not out of the woods from a standpoint of the pandemic, but yet there's more normalcy than there were this time last year, in that we're having in-person classes, there are more students on campus. So that's just, we had Set Friday last week for the first time in 2 years. So there's a lot of excitement going into this weekend's season opener against Jackson State in Miami.
Yes, sir. And Coach Meskis, man, last year, how tough was it for you guys, even though you know you all had success considering all things? You know, you all won a good number of games and you got in the MEAC tournament there, won a big game. So how was it for your staff, for your players last year, to do all those restrictions, trying to deal with the George Floyd stuff as well, and just coming together as a team with all things going on last year?
Well, you just said a lot, and it was, in a lot of ways, it was a year unlike any other. And if you just look at the impact of George Floyd's murder, I don't want to get too philosophical there, but isn't it amazing how often in history how unfortunately, sometimes it takes a death. It takes someone's death to bring attention or to bring us together or to accomplish a goal or cause that it should not have taken that for. Exactly. And so it's unfortunate that George Floyd lost his life. He lost it, period, so young, but in the manner that he did. But yet, hopefully, all of the benefits from that, the lessons that we learned, hopefully those will last on in so many ways. And we felt them in terms of the 2020 election. I can go on and on. There's more vibe, there's more talk, there's more excitement around the popularity and the interest in HBCUs across the country. And I'm not at all saying all of that goes back to George Floyd, but I dare say that there's certainly, and it certainly was impactful.
Yes, sir.
Now you add to that the impact of COVID. It was in a lot of ways the most difficult season that I've ever been a part of. And I think I speak for most coaches in terms of, we're sort of the creatures of habit.
Yes.
We need structure. And we like to have plans. We like to know things are gonna go a certain way. And throughout the season, you just didn't know what was gonna happen from day to day. I mean, literally, you did not know if a game was gonna take place. You didn't know if all of your guys were gonna be clear to play. You didn't know about the opponents. And a number of teams were actually at the game site or on the bus to go to games, only to learn that someone had tested positive and the game would not be played. And so just dealing with that throughout the season, the number of games that were canceled that weren't played, it was clearly an extremely impactful season. And of course, one of the positives that did come out of that was that schools had the opportunity to give those through the NCAA, they can get that a year back. And so I hope for most that will prove beneficial for the, just in terms of the college experience of so many student athletes.
And coach, as a son of a coach and HBCU grad, I went to Tennessee State HBCU grad myself. For me, I'm in my mid-30s. I've changed the way I look at life now as a radio host, having interns now, having a staff, and trying to get close to people I hadn't been close. I was also on that grind and that go. So for me, even as a guy in my mid-30s, a little older than you, and you're a guy, so you coach are, it made me change how I look at life too and get more engaged and involved as well. So as you said, Coach, I wasn't active in the community, but I was active in the Georgia runoff elections here, in the election here in Georgia. I use my show to talk politics on my show. Never done, I've just been all sports. So that incident with George Floyd, like you said, it made me reevaluate myself as a host with a platform in Atlanta, Georgia, number 9 marketing in the country, on a few young black hosts in this nation with in this market. I got to do something different to help my community. So like you said, Coach, it's sad that it takes an incident like George Floyd to make me, a guy who's been there for 10 years, change my mindset and how I'm going to approach this show going forward.
Well, I got to tell you what, that really says a whole lot about you from the standpoint of, I think it's important in any endeavor, in a profession, that we continue to grow and evolve, you know. And for example, you know, the old saying, well, this is how we've always done it. It doesn't necessarily make it best. And, but, you know, if you look back historically, sports and entertainment have always had a connection, a strong connection. And so, you know, were it not for that, especially in the black community, and if were it not for that, we would not, and it took us too long to really have an appreciation for the social commitments to activism on the part of Jim Brown, Muhammad Ali, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I can go Bill Russell, Curt Flood. I can go on and on and on. And so what happened to George Floyd, it sort of reminded us of that. You know, I think in different ways, we all had opportunities to sort of impact our players or impart lessons on them. And a lot of times I try to explain the why of something to our players and then kind of leave it to them. But I can say to you, I think we had about a 99% success rate in terms of all the players who voted last year. And I don't know that I've ever been a part of a team who had that many. But I'll also admit, I don't know if I ever went to the depths, okay, or was committed to make sure that all of them. And then that resonated with them. They pushed their teammates to register those who weren't registered and voted. They sent in absentee ballots. They marched in souls to the polls here in Tallahassee. And so it was just but they really understood why. So it was just a beautiful thing to watch, to see them, you know, young men, 18, 23 years of age, you know, actively involved, embraced being involved. And so hopefully, again, those are lessons. They're not going to help you win a basketball game, but it's going to kind of shape who they are and who they become as young men.
And Coach McCullough, this is my personal opinion, that I like kids who go to HBCU schools. I chose Tennessee State because I could have went to Clark, Morehouse down the street from where I grew up at. I want to go out of state to a state institution, not a private one. And I feel like when you go to a private HBCU, it's a different experience where the people actually really care about you. It's not so much that elite class per se. Yeah. It's more just hands-on, I'm going to help you with your life. And I feel like, for you, Coach, you're like his guy's father. Talk about that experience, like being a father figure, all these young black men that you're coaching, to be them husbands, fathers in the community, leaders and activists, as you say, Coach. So talk about how that burden on you to make sure these young black men grow up successful after they hang up their shoes, man.
Well, I think some of us carry that mantle, and some of us embrace it, and some I think just because you're a coach, you don't necessarily have to do that. A lot of them choose not to do that. But, you know, for me, coaching was my calling. I mean, I was literally called to coach. I've been coaching since before I knew I was a coach. I've been coaching since I was 12, 13 years of age. And so being able to uplift, enhance, you know, young black men, I take a great deal of pride in that. I think it's a charge to keep that I have. It's a responsibility. It's a challenge, but one that I embrace, and that's just kind of who I am. I guess it goes back to growing up without a father. And my high school coach was the only father figure that I ever had. And so he and I had, we were probably what, maybe about 4 months short of a 40-year relationship.
Wow.
From the time I made the JV team as a ninth grader until about 4 months before he died. And so that's from, I made the team as a ninth grader, JV team as a ninth grader. I later on became assistant coach to him for 4 years at a different high school that I attended, but in Birmingham, Alabama. I could go on and on and on. He's at my wedding. He was at my first game as a head coach. I mean, again, he was, you know, along with my mother, they had to, those two people had the two greatest impact, you know, on my life. And so, you know, I started out teaching grades 5 through 8 out of college. And so oftentimes I just have the gym open 7, 8 o'clock at night. And you look up and there's kids still hanging around. So it eventually dawned on me that there's something missing at home. There's a void. And they found some comfort. They found some caring just hanging around there. In other words, they really didn't want to go home for various reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I can go on and on and on, but it's all about relationships. And so, you know, not more than a year or two go by did I still hear from men that I taught and coached in high school or early in college. And again, the relationships, that's what it's all about. So anytime that I have an opportunity, responsibility, I think, to really help make them better man. So the last thing I'll say on that is here we talk about that young men should grow in, our players should grow in 4 areas. They should grow academically. And I can say to you, I've been here 4 years. I had 14 seniors to complete the eligibility. All 14 have graduated. And all of them have graduated in 4 to 4.5 years. So they should grow academically. They should grow athletics, be able to reach the, be the best that they can be in their sport, in basketball. They should grow socially. And we do a lot of things to help them grow socially. They should grow spiritually. We don't get into choosing a church or denomination for them, but yet we visit different churches. We have different speakers and, you know, come in. So again, that defines what I call a holistic approach. And if I didn't push that, then I'd be failing them in a lot of ways. And included in that, I want to add this specifically. We put a great deal of emphasis on how you treat women. Every year we started, like the Sunday before our first team meeting, you know, how you talk to women. Their names, you don't say, you don't call women. That I better not hear. And again, that didn't reflect well on you. Nor does reflect well on our program. And so again, those are things that I feel a responsibility, you know, as a man and more specifically as a Black man. You know, other people may not feel so strongly about that, but I think that's my responsibility. When they leave FAMU as basketball players, I want them to feel that, you know what, Coach McCollum talked to me about that. Coach McCollum always emphasized that. And so that, again, that's a part of what it's all about.
Most definitely, Coach. And I feel like the approach you take is what lasts for life. Like, I can talk about, like, Coach Frankie Allen in Tennessee State, Alexander, got like Randy Peel, who are still in my life to this day, you know, who helped me out to this day. Can call and say, what's up about anything, and they'll answer my phone call. So Will Jones at A&T, who I was a GA when I was at Tennessee State, you know.
You dating yourself now, Will Jones. What a name. I got to tell you, what a name, what a character. Will was such a character that more often than not, unfortunately, that side of it overshadowed the job he did and the outstanding teams he had in D.C. Back in the 80s, during the time when Georgetown was one of the 2 or 3 most dominant teams in the country. District of Columbia led by Will Jones. they were very, very good, good Division II team. And you just mentioned a couple of names, Frank Allen, just what a great guy. He just had a great temperament. No matter what was going on, Frankie always had a smile on his face. And then you mentioned Cy Alexander. Cy and I go way back. Those are, you just mentioned two names, guys, gosh, I've known for over 30 years. And so, you know, you had the opportunity to have those people to be mentors or to touch your life in some way. You're very fortunate.
Can't forget Darren Tillis and Jamal Brown, who's still at Norfolk State. You know, I can't forget those two guys, too, who had a great impact on me during my time at Tennessee State. Because I'm going to tell you, you know, I would go to the office all the time and just have life talk with those guys, man. And help me, because I didn't want to tell my dad certain things. Listen, Dad, I didn't want to tell you certain things. So I just had that ear to get them to tell me, give me that other opinion about me getting in trouble at home, you know?
Yes. And sometimes that's a role that's sort of, I think it's missed, and I don't want to get in comparisons or whatever, but today the coaching staff's a lot larger. So, in other words, each coach don't have to do as much, but I came up in that era where there was just two coaches that could go on the road, recruit, with the two full-time coaches. One was called restricted earnings or part-time. So each coach, you had a whole lot more responsibilities. You recruited, you scouted, you did everything. You know, there were no coaches. Only thing they did was player development, you know, or this. You wore a lot of hats, you know. And so, but as a result, I think all of that really helped me to be better prepared when I became a head coach.
Most definitely. And Coach Matt Skiss, man, you went on this Puerto Rico trip for your team. You went undefeated over there. Tell us about that trip and how fun was it for you guys to get out of the country, experience another part of the United States, and also just be together and bonding more as you get ready for this year coming up.
Well, the last point you mentioned, that may be the most important one. I can't think of any other opportunity that allows you to bond like a foreign tour. You go in a foreign area, and of course we chose San Juan because it's a U.S. territory. And so now let's say another option was the Bahamas, but Bahamas technically is another country. So that would be an international trip. And so due to the impact of the pandemic, I felt just across the board, it would be a lot easier trip, a lot easier to get it approved. And so the transition wouldn't be as difficult. And I knew we wouldn't have trouble getting games down there. But the opportunity to bond, you know, is, again, that's huge. Team building chemistry. And so you when you go to a foreign place, all those things you take for granted, they're out of the window. You don't want to go two blocks to the store by yourself. You know, for example, so we had a rule, anytime anyone left the hotel, had to be at least three players at minimum. And so, you know, we got to do a lot of things. They really had a great time zip lining, you know, spent a day at Old San Juan. We were scheduled to go to Rainforest, but the onset of Tropical Storm Fred kind of canceled our last game, as well as the trip to the Rainforest. But, you know, we returned a veteran team, all five starters, but yet, you know, we have four incoming players who are going to be an integral part of any success we have. So, you know, you only get to go on a foreign tour once every 4 years. So I think the timing of foreign tours are really, really important. So we just felt like we had a couple of guys didn't play last year because of injuries, and everyone's season was cut short, probably anywhere from 8 to 12, 14 games last year that you didn't get to play. And then these four or five new players were counting on. I just felt that the timing was ideal to try to do a foreign tour. And so, again, you get 10 practices that you otherwise wouldn't get. So normally in the summer, you only get a total of 8 hours of instruction. 4 hours would be in the weight room, only 4 hours on the floor. So now you add to that, you get 10 practices, like a normal practice for us is 2.5 hours. So now we'll come back we start practice late in September, we'll come back way ahead of where we would have otherwise would have been. And I think, you know, we gave us our staff an opportunity to see players in different positions, different situations, you know, to play different combinations together, to experiment. So we knew a lot more about our team than we otherwise would have known. So I just think across the board, it was a great trip. And it's also, it says a lot about the commitment from our athletic director, Courtney Gauthier, to make that commitment, you know, for us to go to San Juan.
And coach, recruiting wise, I see you guys, a few kids from Georgia on your roster. Florida's always deep talent as well. Talk about recruiting the FAMU and how the portal will help you get guys because you've been successful. People know that you coach really well and your schemes are very good and help young men grow as players. So talk about recruiting wise, how you're going to use that portal and getting guys from Florida and Georgia and Alabama to come down and play for you guys, man.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned those are the three states where we place the largest degree of emphasis. A lot of that is because, you know, realistically, that's what's affordable to us. Now, fortunately, you know, we got Florida's a large state. We got a lot of good players in our state. And Georgia is just unbelievable. Georgia just, for years and years, produced unbelievable talent. And, you know, people talk about the football talent that comes out of the state of Georgia. I don't think basketball is too far behind. I think it was 2018, I want to say, class of 18, 17 or 18, there were the state of Georgia produced more top 100 players than any other state. And so you know better than I. You grew up, you remember those outstanding Celtics teams.
Oh, yes.
I know you told me how old you are. I know you remember them. You know, and so how about that one year? I think the entire starting line, all five starters played in the NBA.
Yes.
That may be unprecedented, you
yes,
know.
Sir.
And so Randolph and Dwight Howard and so forth. So again, you know, you can just draw a circle, a 50-mile radius around Atlanta, and the talent is just unbelievable. And so we have a large alumni base. In Atlanta, you know, it's an easy, you know, depending on how you drive, but about 4.5 hours, you know, we can be in the downtown area. And so we can get to Atlanta faster than we can get to South Florida, Fort Lauderdale, or Miami, where maybe the largest part of alumni base. And so not only that, but there are also a large number of events held in Atlanta every summer. On the radar, just a number of events. And so, for example, we went over to an event the last two weekends in June where it had to be events that were sponsored only by high school athletic association. They were used for high school teams. Well, in addition to being able to evaluate and recruit, we had not been able to do this, you know, since the summer of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to seeing all of those outstanding, you know, teams and players from Georgia, there were approximately 20 to 30 teams from Florida that we got to see. So by going to Atlanta, I got to not only see Georgia kids, but I got to see a lot of Florida kids from, you know, the Orlando, Tampa area that now, you know, we don't have to make as many trips down there because we got to see them. We got to see them early over in Atlanta. So, Birmingham, Alabama is my home, and Alabama, you know, is a neighboring state, you know, just to the west of us. So now that we're going to the SWAC, I think it gives us even more reason. You know, we got two of the teams in the SWAC, Alabama State, Alabama A&M in the state of Alabama. The SWAC offices, headquarters in Birmingham. The SWAC postseason tournament is held in Birmingham. So all of those are additional reasons, and I think will really add to the name, you know, FAMU, the number one public HBCU in the country. You look at our academics, you know, we're pushing to become one of the top 100 public universities, you know, in the country. So Just so many good things here, so many things to sell. So I think, and then we, you and I talked earlier about the interest in HBCUs and how dare I leave out, I can't end this conversation without talking about the deal where the ink is barely dry on the Nike LeBron James deal. And I got to tell you, there are a lot of programs and programs much, 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 much bigger than ours that don't have a deal like this.
Most definitely.
And so it's just an unbelievable this deal. And while it will all 14 sports and the Marching 100 all would benefit in terms of gear and equipment and all of that. But yet there's also an academic component. There's I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars that would be that are established to be used for academic scholarships. So it's just a win-win. And so that too, that's just really going to heighten, just add to the FAMU brand. And so I think that the timing, we were really poised for great things going into the 21-22 season, our first year in the SWAC.
Last one for you, guy, Coach, this. When you come to Atlanta, Coach, what is your favorite spot to eat here in town, man?
Oh, my gosh, you put me on the spot. Well, you know, I'm not going to say you know as well as I, you know better than I. There's so many. I got to tell you, I lived in Atlanta for 4 years. So I was an assistant at Georgia Tech the 2010-11 season, Iman Shumpert's last year. I lived in Smyrna. So I know so many. Yeah, it just depends how much time I got. You know, if I got a weekend there, I'm going to Houston's.
Most definitely.
You know, I'm going to Houston's. I mean, I could go on and on. You know, I could go to Mary Mac's if I want some good, you know, soul food. I mean, gosh, I could go on and so many great places. I mean, it just depends on, you know, who I want to go to dinner with or the occasion. I mean, it's just so many, you know, it's so many different places. And that's what I like about Atlanta. Great restaurants. You don't like for things to do, places to go. So I try to get people complain about the traffic, but to me, it's a pretty darn good trade-off.
Yes. I haven't left in my whole life, Coach, for a reason. I mean, every job I make sure is the radio job is the Atlanta I take. I don't want to leave the town. So I have opportunities to go to Charlotte, Orlando, Memphis, Indiana. I'll stay here in Atlanta and where I can do whatever I want to do when I want to do it. Always something happened in the city, I'm good to go.
Well, having lived there for 4 years, I can appreciate what you're saying. You mentioned I think Charlotte is a booming, up and coming city, and you hear so much now about Nashville, you know, rightfully so. But with all due respect, there's something about Chocolate City.
Yes, sir.
That's hard to beat.
Well, Coach, I hope to see you either at A&M or at Alabama State, and hopefully you all will play somewhere here closer to Georgia, Nashville, or some our house in Nashville still. So hopefully, if you're close enough, I'm going to come see you on a non-conference game, and I'll see you in the SWAC when you play at the SWAC tournament in Birmingham as well.
Well, please do. If your travels ever bring you to Tallahassee or close by, don't hesitate to give us a shout.
Will do, Coach. Thank you for your time today, Coach. It was very fun, man.
I really appreciate the opportunity.
Anytime, Coach.